it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, so please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Sherry. Everyone, my name is Sherry and I am an alcoholic. Hi, great to be here. I really mean that. I'm really glad to be here. I have some notes that I'm going to refer to, and then after that it'll be just from my heart, from me to you as a person in recovery. So I already said hello, I'm Sherry and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Bill for asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope with you guys, as well as all the amazing women at my home group, Tuesday Women, Amity Group. It's a closed meeting for women on Tuesdays at 7 o'clock in Visalia. Thanks, ladies. I love you. You're my lifeline. I'd like to start by saying I didn't come to AA to stay miserable. I came to AA because I was miserable. And my controlling, know-it-all attitude made me stuck. I was completely baffled that I couldn't change or will my circumstances to be different. Frankly, I was mystified that as my life choices got a little better, my drinking got darker. This may sound funny, but I really didn't want to be an alcoholic. Go figure. I truly wanted to manage all of my life on my terms, including how I drank. And in most areas, it kind of worked, but never with alcohol. I was a daily drinker in the year 2000, when my life was really, really dark. My father was dying and I was going through a divorce. It was a dark time in my life and alcohol seemed to be my only relief. I honestly can't tell you or pinpoint when alcohol stopped being my relief. It just kind of faded into not being relief for me. As years went on, I didn't want to drink my sorrows away anymore because life was getting better. And I was also healing from the death and divorce. But alcohol was an area that turned on me. Instead of being a relief, it became a manipulation and mastermind of my life. I didn't drink every day at that point. In 2000 I did, but then I was really trying not to. So I didn't drink every day, but every day I thought of the drink. So whether I was drinking or not, I was always thinking of drinking. I knew exactly when I was, and if I had a 12-hour period that I didn't, I knew it. And I was kind of proud of myself, and then the next day would happen. Let's see. So like we hear in these meetings, I take a drink, the drink takes a drink, and then the drink takes me. I was stuck without any options or choices, and I hungered for relief. I didn't go to rehab or to jail. I just continued in misery, wondering what's wrong with me. And I vividly remember that. Like, why can't I get this? What is this about? I really didn't know much of AA. I just knew I was not working. And every time I would take a drink, the drink would take me. My quick getting to AA story is I went out with my boss and I couldn't wait to be done with that dinner time with her. We went out for Mexican food and had some margaritas and I just couldn't wait to get home so then I could get my drink on and do it in private. And I really like to isolate. And I knew deep inside of me that I was an alcoholic. But I thought, as long as I don't hurt anyone, and if I just stay home, nobody's the wiser, and the only person I'm really hurting is myself. So that night, I went home and I continued to down bottles of wine. I don't know how much. I just know it. There was at least two, if not more. And with that, I was in a blackout. I was in a blackout for at least 8 hours, if not more. I did drive. I don't think that I killed anyone, but I can't be for sure because I was in a blackout driving. I did get home, and the car made it home. And I woke up the next day, and somehow in the middle of the night, I must have thought that I wanted to do a home improvement project. I owned my own house at the time, and I ripped up all of the carpeting in the downstairs. And when I woke up, and this is another thing that was baffling, there was nobody, I didn't have anybody over that night, but I was naked and full of chocolate. I didn't have chocolate. I didn't have chocolate in the house, so I don't know how I got it, and I don't know if I paid for it. I just know that I was filled with it. And when I went downstairs, there was just yellow foam on the floor, and I thought, oh shit, I have no money. What if it's not hardwood floors like I had originally thought? Now what? What did I do? Kind of one of the thoughts that also happened that night or that day, I remember my pores smelling of booze. I had gotten to such a point that I could just smell me and what I was doing to me, or what it was doing to me. I think it's a both thing. It's an unhealthy relationship for sure. And smelling like that, and then and I was a manager. I managed several branches of a financial institution, and I was fine going in late because they didn't track that. But some people relied on me, and I remember calling one of my employees, or actually she called me, and she said, Sherry, did you call me at 2 or 3 a.m.? And what do we do in our alcoholism? We lie. I'm great at lying. And I said, well, I don't think I did. She's like, nope, I have your number on my phone. And I said, oh, well, it must have been one of those butt dials or, you know. So I made up some excuse. But one of the things that I remember is I really like this girl. She's a really neat person. But she shared with me that her twin sister was killed by a drunk driver. And I just thought, like, that just brought such a thought of, that could be me. That I was driving. There were phone books in my car. I was trying to do a hookup of some sort. I don't know who, but I guess I was going to, like, randomly go in the phone book and be like, hey, I don't know. I really don't know. And I thought then the solution would be my phone. If I could find my phone, I could trace back all of the things that I blacked out from, and I could then make up all of the stories that I need to make up to be okay and live another day in my insane life. But I couldn't find that flipping phone. I could not find it. And so I just remember going to work and thinking, I don't know if I had appointments. I don't know if I'm supposed to meet clients. I don't know if I made other phone calls. Just give me my phone and I can make it work. Like, I thought that was the solution. And, you know, then on lunch hour, I went home. And I thought, well, maybe I can find the phone. Couldn't find the phone. And I just surrendered. And I just got down on my knees, and I prayed to a God that I didn't know. The most honest moment of my life of just, I can't do this anymore. And I cried to God and I said, God, I know I'm an alcoholic, but I don't want to stop drinking. Please help me. And still couldn't find my phone, went back to work. A week prior to that date, I had a friend that I worked with, and she said, we were talking about this issue, and it was an ethical issue, and she revealed herself as being someone that I now am, a recovering alcoholic. And she's like, Sherry, I understand your issue. Just so you know, I'm in sobriety. I go to AA. And I looked at her like she was loco. I'm like, what? And I couldn't get out of there fast enough. I'm like, does she have x-ray vision? Can she tell? Is something happening with my liver? I don't know. But I just want to get away from this chick. Because I didn't know her that well. So that was really weird to me. Sure enough, after that prayer and going back to work, there was just one resounding thought. Call Kelly, call Kelly, call Kelly, call Kelly. Kelly didn't go to work that day. I'm like, oh, now what? There's that option. But I went to great lengths to get her phone number. And I love in the big book how it says that if you really are serious and you want to get relief from this thing called alcoholism, that you'll go to any length to get sober. And I did it instinctively. It was like my soul was like, you're just calling her. Just do it. And I finally got someone to give me her phone number to call her at home. And I told her what happened. And I'm like, Kelly, if I could just find my phone, everything will be fine. And she said, I'm picking you up and we're going to AA tonight. And I'm like, not tonight. Maybe next week or the week after. She's like, nope, it's going to be tonight. I'm like, whoa, whoa, this is real. This is, and I went and I cried. And I cried in AA for 3 months, and I still do it today. And if I do it today here, I'm sorry. I know that makes some people uncomfortable. But I found out I'm kind of emotional, and that's a good thing, too. It's all right. But I went, and that was August 20th, 2004. Right? That's awesome. And I'm not in misery anymore. And by the way, that was in Wisconsin. I don't live in Wisconsin anymore, but that's where that started. So that was my experience. My strength now, so what I want to share with you is now just from my heart. That's all the notes that I had. Is my experience. So that was my experience, and I want to share with you my strength and my hope. I just have bullet points, so I am looking down a little bit. You got to be honest, huh? Okay, so my strength is in my higher power, who I didn't know at the time, who I'm glad was never pushed at me in these meetings. And now I have a great relationship, and with my higher power, I felt like, you know what, I can make a move from Wisconsin to California, and that's pretty awesome because I have nothing to fear. I just went to the coast this past weekend, and I bought a shirt, and it says, let your faith be bigger than your fear. And to be honest, that first year of sobriety sucked. I just really had to say that. It was hard for me. I don't know what anyone else's experience was, but it was painful. I was feeling things I didn't want to feel, and I was fearful. And I remember sharing, because there's a lot of mental illness in my family, and I said to her, I said, if you take away the drink, I might find out that I have a mental illness like my father. And she said, you either have it or you don't, with or without the drink. The drink just makes it worse. I'm like, oh, okay. I was also super fearful of who was I? I didn't know who I was. And I kind of had this childlike idea that people came in two categories, good and bad. Well, a lot of bad things happened to me, so I kind of lumped myself up into that category, and I acted on that behavior. So I did a lot of bad things that I felt very remorseful for, and the cycle just continued. So to me, it was bad and good, and I'm in the bad. But even though I was in the bad, I still thought, don't I deserve some good? Even bad people deserve some good. So I was fearful about taking the drink away and then just being in the mirror with myself. Like, I tried to be what everybody told me I was supposed to be. I just had no idea, and I just didn't want to know. So I really think that was part of the first year of it being so painful for me, is just that absolute fear. I was just filled with fear. But there was one thing, and that was go to the meetings. Bring the body and let the mind follow and do something different. I just didn't have the answer, and I really wanted relief. So as much fear as I felt, I was willing to pay the price of fear to let go of the misery. I just didn't want to be in misery anymore. I was so done with not caring if I lived or died the next morning. I remember getting mad when I'd wake up alive. Like, shit, come on, really? I'm alive again? I got to do this again? I don't want that. So really, I mean, I say this all the time because I'm this happy person. And I think a lot of people think that that's fake. Like, oh, what's her deal? Because somehow misery loves company, right? But I think happiness can love company too. And the truth is I didn't come here and I didn't stay here to live a miserable life. What's the point? It may be painful, but I'm not miserable. I'm peaceful. I remember this guy in program, and he would say, and he had such passion, and he'd say in those meetings and with my home group back in Wisconsin, he's like, if I could give you the peace that I have inside, you would just do what I do. And I'm like, whoa, Tim, I don't know. All right, that's awesome. That home group was really awesome. It was a VA home group, and those men went through a lot. So did the women there too. It was really amazing. And I thought, boy, if they can do it with the life that they live, certainly I can do this. And I remember saying once to someone in program, well, you know, I got this. I got this program because I'm strong-willed. And they laughed at me and laughed. This has nothing to do about being strong-willed. It's the absolute opposite. It is letting go of my will and allowing and listening to someone else's experience and helping them help me. I don't like being helped. I don't know if anyone else is as stubborn. I have been told my entire life that I'm stubborn, and to this day, I still don't believe it. That's how stubborn I am. And I'm kind of serious, like, show me some evidence. I think that's evidence alone, but I still won't accept it, I guess. But I think the strength that I also have is not only with my higher power, but it's within these groups. I get to be lifted up. I get to have somebody share their experience, strength, and hope and show me how it's done. And that is my strength. I love the first step, because if you really look at the first step says we. The first word is we. Everything for me was me, me, me. I can do this. I'm strong-willed. I got this. I'm going to make this happen. I can control this. They need to do it my way. And so I had to let go of me for we. And when I did that, I got sober. And I get to continue to do that every time I let go of me. My other strength is in sponsorship. I am so happy. My experiences, my first sponsor, she was awesome. And she, without her strength in saying, you're coming to a meeting tonight and being that strong and forceful, I don't know that I'd be here today. So I super appreciate her. But she didn't finish the 12 steps. And so when we got to step 6, she's like, Sherry, this is as far as I got. And I'm like, oh, well, it worked for her, so I guess it's going to work for me. And I did that for 5 years. And then I made this move, and I got into my isms again, and it took me a year to ask someone to sponsor me. I had to actually go through the whole process just in a little different way of saying, do I really want this? Am I really an alcoholic? All of this evidence and that mind, right? How delusional I can be immediately. I had someone in my life, she was persistent with me and in a loving way. She just always kind of just said, hey, I'm right here, just calling, just seeing how you're doing. And she said to me, Sherry, I believe if you honestly work a thorough set of steps in AA, that it will positively impact your entire life, every area of your life. I said, okay, darn, I don't want to do that fourth step. Okay. Oh, and the 9, I never even did the 9. And you know what? That's what we did. And I tell you, I am a different person because of working the 12 steps of AA in my life. And I'm so thankful that I live here and that I have her in my life that has, I always say, is my AA lifeline. I'm so glad to be sober because I'm not in misery. I've had miserable days. But I don't feel, when I wake up, I'm not like, oh, I'm still alive. I'm not looking at that anymore. So that's part of it. And then also I sponsor, and I have amazing sponsees whom I love so much and that give me so much more than I can ever give them. It's just such a nice walk in life together. It's such a fellowship. The other thing with sponsoring and working the strength of this program, worked 12 steps, have sponsorship, but that big book. Some people have a hard time reading the big book, not me. Day one, when I got that big book, I wanted a solution so bad because I was in such pain that when I read that big book, I'm like, oh, there's me. Oh, there's me too. Oh, there's me. I couldn't get enough. It was like, finally, I have an answer to my insanity. I'm not batshit crazy. I'm just a drunk. Woohoo! So that was hope for me. It was. I'm like, okay, because this is something that I can do in life. And you know what? I will learn how to do this. So that, I love the big book. With working this program, the positive impact that it has on relationships, and I just want to talk about that, the relationship that I first told you about was with me. I did not know who I was, and I pretty much wanted to make everybody else happy at my own expense. And I was told very early on about 13 steps. Don't you be a 13 stepper. I'm like, what's a 13 stepper? And then it was explained to me. And it was explained that for the first year of my sobriety, that I should not make any big changes or enter into any relationships, and that I should just work a program. And that's what I did. Yes, I would put my hair up extra cute sometimes and put a little extra makeup on early on. But I didn't do anything, and I continued to work with my sponsor and get some cues here and there. And then something happened. And I don't know if this happens to men, but for me, and I've heard this with women, is we have a hard time stating when we're angry and claiming negative emotions. And I love that this program says it's an honest program, and that I could go into a meeting and then they would say, you know, everyone had to introduce their name. I am Sherry, I'm an alcoholic. And one day I just said, everybody was so positive that meeting. They're like, oh, everything's great. Oh, la, 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 la. And I was pissed off at the world. And I'm like, and I remember it was coming to me and it was my turn. And I'm like, am I going to do this one more time to appease other people, or am I going to be honest? And I stopped and I said, I know you guys are having a really good time right now, but I just want to tell you, I'm freaking angry right now. I'm going through this, this, and this, and I am angry. That's all I have to say. I pass. And everyone kind of looked at me, and nobody gave me judgment. It was so freeing. I'm like, oh, I can do this. And so I did something that I never did before. Not only did I not pick up the drink, I also said no if any man would ask me out in AA. Because how can I date somebody when I don't even know who I am? And I never said no. Part of my regrets in life. Trust me, there's that resentment on that page. Ah, never say no. But at first I'd have wobbly knees. Like if someone would say like, hey, you want to get a cup of coffee or blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, my sponsor told me I shouldn't. Like I use that ploy, right? And then it was interesting. There are some really wonderful men in this program, and I just love that. They're my brothers, and I'm just so appreciative. And they were like, cool. And then there were some real a-holes, just saying. There were still. But I didn't get so offended by them anymore, because I'm like, you know what? If that's how you were going to treat me, just asking me for a cup of coffee, then so glad I ditched that bullet. But what I also found out is I started to say this in program. Do you know what? I have made the resolution that I am not going to date for 1 year in AA because I want to put my program first. That felt like I was so strong. Like I wanted to sing the song, I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar. Like, oh, I just said that. Like, I know that sounds so pathetic, but for me, that was a big deal. And I was able to say it and get respect. And little by little, I started to respect myself. And little by little, I started to find out who I am without compromise. What a gift. I've had 3 men in my life in the past year die under the age of 46 years old of heart attacks. Life is so short. Like, it's been just startling to me. And I'm thinking, you know what? This life is a gift. Why was I so fearful of letting go of this thing called alcohol when all this other stuff awaited? It's because I didn't know what awaited, and I didn't trust it. But once I did, it was so cool. I didn't date for 3 years. And then I went online, and now I live in California, and I'm married. The awesome things that happen in these meetings, if you stay, I feel like that guy, Tim, if I could just give you what I have, this peace, you'd take it too. Take it for yourself. It's so important. And I guess that's how I'll end. I get 5 more minutes, they say, 5 to 8, is the hope. Because if there's nothing in this world, there needs to be some hope. I don't know where everyone's at in this room. And if there's some people that feel miserable, and I just have a sneaking suspicion that there's got to be one person in here that's really struggling if they should stay or not and put themselves all the way in. And I think there's, in the fellowship, there's this guy that I knew, and he came to me, this is back in Wisconsin, he came to these meetings for 20 years, and he drank all 20 years. And one day, he said, "Sherry, I want to talk to you." So it was just Jim and I outside in the parking lot. And he's like, "Sherry, you weren't here last week, but I just told everybody in our group that I've been doing this and I've been drinking the whole 20 years. And I just felt like I needed to tell you." I did get on the AA pulpit, I have to tell you. Something just came over me. And he was one of those real smart guys. Like, they're smart, but then there's smart, where they're speaking in almost tongues in a way. Like, they're speaking in this Trekkie, Star Trekkie language that you're like, huh, what? And all I do in that is nod and wave, like, I getcha. I don't say a word, cause I have no freaking clue what he just said. He was that smart. And I think that's hard in AA when you're that smart. It's like, he couldn't let go of his brain. And this isn't about a brain thing. This is about, I think, a heart thing of just, and a soul thing of that faith, that AA faith. So anyway, so he said, you know, "I've been doing this for 20 years and I'm really, really sick." He was almost on his deathbed. And I said, "Well, Jim, I would argue with you that you haven't done this for 20 years because you never started." He looked at me, I'm like, he's like, "I'd never started. I've been going to the meetings." I'm like, "Yeah, you went to the meetings. Did you get a sponsor?" "No." "Are you doing your step work?" "No." "Are you sponsoring anyone?" "Hopefully not, right? But are you sponsoring?" "No." I'm like, "You haven't been going. Everything that you think you know, you don't know. Because now you got to take those 20 years and erase all of that because you think you have AA, but you don't have AA. You got to stop and start from square one, which is get a sponsor, don't drink, and just let someone else lead you." I think that's the hardest thing. I don't think people like to be led. I know I don't. And so then, this is where my AA pulpit continued. I said, "So what 3 men are you considering asking for your sponsor?" And he's like, "Oh, I don't know. I didn't..." Like, "Name 3 men right now. Who is it going to be?" "Well, I guess I could ask this one or that one." "Good. Which one is it out of those 3? "Oh, Rose, you're putting me on the spot here." "Yep, yes I am. Okay, well, I'm going to pick this guy." "All right." And it was a guy that had 30 years of sobriety or more. And a year later, he came up to me and thanked me for saving his life. That's what I mean by hope. Hope. There is hope in this room. There is hope in your life. There is hope that you aren't even aware of yet. But you got to lose yourself to gain yourself. Are you willing to do the deal? Thanks for letting me share, because with that, I get another day.